I did indeed, yes. I was working as a junior doctor, did about 3 years before, 3 years of various medical specialties before I went into psychiatry. But I was in the emergency room in the busy London hospital, Charing Cross. It's now moved to Chelsea. And one particular incident, one Saturday night, there was a fight outside a local music venue, Hammersmith Palais, and we had three stabbing victims, and we called them stabbing one, stabbing two, and stabbing three. In fact, there was also a big road traffic accident with a motorcyclist. So the emergency room was full of, four patients whose identities weren't fully known. And the patients all lived. Two of them had to go to theatre. And just after, a detective came in looking for blood samples for the crime scene. And I ended up helping him sort out the blood samples. And I was kind of curious what happened, who stabbed who? And I take my hat off to the surgeons that repaired the liver laceration. But somehow I found myself interested in the story behind, what was going on. What's the narrative? I mean, that's just a single incident, but I think looking back, I can see that, maybe that was horses for courses, as we say. I was more interested in what had gone on necessarily than the anatomy of the injuries.
Well, kudos to you because firstly, you've gone through how many years of study for medicine and now you're going into psychiatry, so you must really love a lecture theatre. But it's interesting because you're right. Sometimes it's often just one pivotal moment or something that really captivates you because the human mind is curious by nature anyway. And do you think you've always been a curious person and that's kind of what drew you in initially?
Well, that's a good question. I guess we're all curious. I don't know. When I was at school, I did really enjoy literature. In the UK, you have to specialise at 16. I had to do all three sciences, and I asked for it. I've always been a keen reader. But I think, who couldn't be interested in the human mind, the link between mental disorder and criminal behaviour,
So in your book, you break down, because you've obviously like over 100 cases and stuff, and you've got it broken down into different types of murders. So is there one in particular that piques your curiosity more than others?
Well, I think, it's dark stuff, it's heavy stuff, but the very first murder I dealt with was an infanticide, and it was this young, attractive woman in her 20s, single parent, and I've described the story in the book, but unfortunately she disposed of a baby down a rubbish chute and told the police the baby had been abducted. Horrible story. And I was just really, intrigued because there didn't seem to be anything wrong with her except that she almost behaved as if the baby had never existed. And obviously in the book I explain how that links in with a story from my family, but so that case really set me off reading around murder and psychiatry, and that sort of 25 years on, that's led me to the book.
You've obviously had to interview these people as well. And, psychopath's always a word that I think sends shivers down people's spines. Do you get nervous talking to someone that's a psychopath?
Yes, I can't pretend that there aren't times when you feel anxious. There are, with the psychopath, we're talking about people with, we call it callous, unemotional traits. So you can actually identify this in some disturbed children. And if you take a child that has these traits, which are, you could call it hardwired, they're there from early in life. If you put that child in a really, in a private school with good parenting, then the outcome can be much better. But if they carry on with those traits, they could end up, in the corporate world or in politics, somewhere that's quite exploitative, uses others for their own ends. If you put that person in a rough housing project, join a gang, parents not around, drug use, then you're heading that sort of personality then heads down a more seriously violent route. But I was not long ago, I was in a meeting with a patient at the end of the table, and he just punched a member of nursing staff in the face. And he'd previously seriously injured a policeman, breaking his cheekbone in three places. And I was just gently challenging him about his aggression, and he came rushing around the table and stood next to me, fist clenched. He said, "I'm not threatening you, Doc." I honestly found myself slipping my glasses off because I thought that I was about to take one for the team,
That's so intense.
How have you gone emotionally and mentally hearing these cases? Because they're quite traumatic cases, and the people you come across can be quite intimidating or quite sadistic. And obviously, that we're human, as human beings, we're conditioned to feel empathy or, you know, to feel emotions. But this would be quite confronting. So how have you gone? Have you found that you've become desensitized or that you've had to check in with yourself not to be overwhelmed by these cases?
So you do get desensitized. You know, I sit there and rip open a pack of crime scene photographs, and I'm quite used to seeing postmortems and bodies. Crime scenes, I get used to that. And I really think sharing it with colleagues. So I've got one particularly trusted colleague. We've worked together for 20 years, and you know, we'll ping each other a text late at night. Can I just run this by you? You know. Yeah. So I think really debriefing. But having said all that, there are some cases you just can't. I mean, I've said it in the book. Child victims. Again, I mean, it's not nice to talk about. And you take that home with you. That's your evening gone after one of those.
Yeah. Is everyone capable of murder?
In the right circumstances, I'm afraid to say yes. Anyone can have a psychotic breakdown. So anyone can develop mental illness, particularly in your 20s. You can also get a drug-induced psychosis. I dealt with a man who took a powerful hallucinogenic drug called AMT, and he started thinking that there were sort of evil spirits coming through the walls, and he very seriously assaulted his pregnant girlfriend. The police officer came on his own, calling for backup, and he was still attacking his wife, and the police officer had to take him on single-handed, and later said it was like wrestling a crocodile. So I identify those examples of how somebody apparently normal can end up killing someone.
So what have you learned about the human mind? Can it be reformed?
Absolutely. Although it can be quite tough to reform. So if you've had take the guy with the drug-induced psychosis, he got better spontaneously within 24 hours, and he was like, what have I done?
Yeah.
On the other end of the spectrum, you take somebody like the man who threatened me, and he engages with treatment, but he just really struggles to get out of his pattern of extreme aggression. Do you remember that famous film Chopper?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean, the opening scene is he's paranoid about the other prisoner, and he thinks the other guy's going to attack him, so he gets in there and shanks him first. It's actually a very good filmic sort of portrayal of the sort of paranoia. So it really does vary. And in psychiatry, we do say that the child is father of the man. You need to understand what someone's been through in their life to make sense of what they end up doing.
Yeah, and you have broken it down very nicely in your book into some very confronting chapters and stories as well. The mind of a murderer, what makes a killer? Dr. Richard Taylor, thank you so much for your time.
Not at all. A pleasure to be invited on, and thanks very much for listening.